14 years ago, my wife and I decided to enter the hospitality space. Initially, to do little functions. My wife's passionate about tea and tea parties. So she started hosting tea parties on the farm, and from there we sort of evolved.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Unpack podcast, where we chat about all things property and finance related. So this week we're back with another very special guest and a little backstory about him. So he is the managing director of a very popular wedding venue in Pretoria. But before I dive into the whole conversation, I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, Lerato. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I was born in Pretoria. My name is Thomas Franken. I grew up on a little dusty farm just outside Pretoria, where we have now also recently started developing quite a lot in the tourism space. I went to school here on the farm, which is another story for another day. And I then actually went and studied BCom, and through various sort of wanderings through the world, I eventually started building, which is very weird because I have no experience, and it somehow, yeah, brought me to where we are now, and I guess why we're having this interview. So life has many, many journeys for people, and as I often say to people, I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up, but I now find myself building things.
So, Thomas, tell me more about what made you decide to create a farmstay venue? And was there a particular moment that sealed this decision for you?
Yeah, so there's quite a long backstory, but the long and short of it is it's a family farm with a lot of history in the educational space, in agriculture and all of that stuff. But about 14 years ago, my wife and I decided to enter the hospitality space. Initially, to do little functions. My wife's passionate about tea and tea parties. So she started hosting tea parties on the farm. And from there, we sort of evolved into doing coffee shops on weekend, and then weddings, and then mountain bike trails, which also became hiking trails. And then once we started doing weddings, we realized how important overnight accommodation is. Firstly, obviously, for your couple, your honeymoon couple, who need a place to get ready on the day of the wedding, and then from there to, you know, also spend the first night of their wedding before heading off on honeymoon. So once we had built the first room and we got involved with other family members who happened to be in the marketing space and making videos and stuff, the wedding craze kind of hit, and Rosemary Hill became a very popular wedding destination because we have a very unique wooden barn structure, which father had actually built about 30 years ago for storage space. Anyway, so weddings from there, we started building another 7 rooms, actually also repurposed rooms. And then over the years, we just started fixing up different spaces on the farm. We got more family and friends involved to invest. And we just started creating really cool spaces. But the big craze and hoo-ha actually only happened about a year ago during the major lockdown, as things started easing off and people were so frustrated about not being able to travel. I think it was around about July, August last year, when interprovincial transport and travel was still not allowed. Some Joburg and Pretoria people started looking for unique and interesting places to stay. And that's how they stumbled on us. And that's how this new hype and buzz has suddenly spread through Gauteng, and everybody's freaking out about our unique stays. Yeah, so I think what we really then figured out was one has to do something unique and different. People were really loving our unit called the Stone Cottage, which is a double-story repurposed old wooden, stone and thatch building that we then turned into a stone and wood structure, which is a double story, lots of windows, lots of light, freestanding bath with beautiful views, lots of plants inside the unit. And then when people started posting pics about this on Instagram, then things just started exploding. We also have a very unique little modular cabin, which is in the forest near Stone Cottage, which also started getting a lot of traction. And we only sort of noticed this happening by the way. We didn't quite understand how we were suddenly getting so many bookings. And when we started investigating and checking on Instagram, we realized that there were three or four really good travel bloggers, you know, travel influencers on Instagram that were posting our stuff. And yeah, from there, we just kind of ran with it and built in record time quite a few new little unique cabins, which I can tell you a little bit more about. But yeah, that's basically in a nutshell, 14 years condensed into 5 minutes.
Wow, that is so amazing. That is such a great story. I love it. So you just mentioned something about your new units. I want to know more about your design process. So what is your philosophy? How do you go from idea to having a drawing on a piece of paper to actually executing your ideas and having the actual structure? So I want to know more about that.
Yeah, sure. So there are a few different design processes. The first one, which was really cool, cabin called Stone Cottage, was actually designed, the layout and the interior was designed by a friend of ours, Mareika, who also lives on the farm. The house that we did for her is another story for another day. But she designed the layout for Stone Cottage, and we really loved her unique way of looking at things, concrete, steel, wood, lots of glass, and incorporating old building, you know, what there is. And she's an interior architect, so she gave us these ideas, but she didn't really know anything about structure and the outside aspects of the actual main building. So my carpenter and I figured it out. It took us 3 months to build this unit, and it was a very expensive lesson, but it was literally the second thing that I had ever built. The first one was the second wedding venue. So we figured it out as we went along, but it took very long, and it was quite expensive in the school fees that we had to pay with all the things that went wrong. But in the end, it was an amazing unit. And from there, we kind of learned really fast, and it evolved quite quickly. So last, when we noticed this sudden sort of need for unique accommodation, we decided we're going to try something with a container, for example. And I got a friend of mine to draw some stuff up on AutoCAD, because I'm not really equipped to be able to do that. And I gave them some ideas, and we put the container down next to a quarry that we have. And we thought of doing something with a container house, because everybody thinks a container house is cool. I mean, I haven't met anybody who doesn't think, you know, doing something with a container is cool. But once we started measuring out things and looking at where do you put your bed, where do you put the toilet, where do you put the kitchen, you quickly realize that a container is really small and really impractical. It's not, the height is nice and the length is nice, but the width is just not practical to work with. So we took long gum poles and we put them straddled across the cabin, well, with what became the cabin, which was a container at the time. And we started building around that and cutting out the container and creating more space in the vacuum between the side wall of the container, the actual A-frame foot that comes down. And we quickly built this amazing little cabin. But as we went along, we decided that working with a container is really impractical and time-consuming, because you've got so much stuff to modify. You're not building something from scratch. You're having to modify existing steelwork, finding things to fit in, to close off gaps, and to let your wall merge with your ceiling, and just trying to solve stuff the whole time instead of just creating something new. So at the same time, we got a video clip of a friend of ours who sent us something about these arched cabins that people were building in America. And I kind of ran with that. And yeah, it was a crazy time. In 11 weeks, we built a place that we now call Cabinville, which now, well, at the time was the one A-frame cabin, which is a two-story, and then the three little pods, which are little curved cabins. They're all over Instagram, so I'm sure you've seen them there, the green ones. Yeah, so that was a lot of learning again as we went along. But over the last few years, since we built Stone Cottage, we really have learned a lot about what our guys can do, because we work mostly with unskilled labor. And with me also being unskilled and just figuring these things out, it's been quite an amazing experience. In between building these things, we've also had to do a lot of repair jobs on a lot of buildings on the farm. So yeah, our skills, our knowledge has like increased a lot. And that whole development, which was basically four units we built in 11 weeks. And then about 3 months later, after recovering from another, I think the second wave hit us quite hard again in December, obviously, as I've explained earlier, with us being in the wedding industry. Our cash flow is very much dependent on weddings. And when we saw this opportunity of now tapping into a potential local tourism market, we did to try and offset the losses we were suffering from lack of weddings. So December, we were cruising along nicely and we were about to build another pod, but a bigger one. We had all the material lined up and we were ready. I had a sketch on a A5 notepad. I thought I was very clever with my layout and everything was ready. And we started casting the floor and we were ready to go when Uncle Cyril hit us with another level four, I think at the around the 28th of December. And then our cash flow dried up again completely. So January, we were delayed. And then February, we were delayed again. And then basically, when we were able to start doing weddings again, cash flow started getting freed up. And then we set a new record. We built the big, what we call now the big pod. Also really cool. You'll see it on Instagram. It's really, really nice. We're getting a lot of good feedback from that. The big pod is also green. It's also got curved cabin sides and really nice light wood interior with a lot of reclaimed wood that we've also repurposed on the inside. So that one we built in 35 days from scratch to completion. It was crazy. Great time. My guys really outdid themselves. And yeah, we've been really lucky in that sense. Even now, again, in July, when again at the end of June, we were hit with the third wave, weddings shut down again. You know, it's so frustrating for some of our couples. They've postponed their weddings 2 to 3 times. And then what we did was we just ran another accommodation special. You know, we said our rates are staying the same, but we're including dinner. And we had almost 90% occupancy right through July on level four, you know, doing takeaways for people. We included dinner, but we did takeaways. And it literally saved the business again. So not only did it save the business the first time around last July and August, but as we've been hitting these speed bumps and roadblocks, we've just had to hustle and sidestep and improvise and find ways of making it work. And that is what these cabins have managed to do for us. So yeah, it's been really amazing.
I love how you just mentioned repurposing buildings. That is so amazing. And I really love that, because the world is now slowly realizing the seriousness of climate change, and it's about time. Seriously, world. But what is your take on sustainable practice in architecture today? Because I do know that with Rosemary Hill, sustainability is one of your core values. So you guys do support local businesses in the area. You make compost from food waste. I know you are also using 100% biodegradable toilet paper. So can you just share more about your thoughts on sustainability and architecture in South Africa?
I definitely think there's opportunity. I think we are very lazy in terms of not trying to find more ways of building sustainably. Traditionally, your bricks and mortar and your normal building materials were quite affordable, but stuff is getting really expensive now. I mean, in the past, when we think, oh, it's so quick and cheap, I just build. But I mean, bricks are expensive, cement is expensive, sand is expensive, corrugated iron, just, you know, roof sheets are becoming so expensive because of the price of steel. So we have certainly been using a lot of repurposed stuff, and often it's conventional stuff, that same expensive stuff that just we're reusing. But I mean, yo, I would love to be in a space like Bali where one can get, you know, limitless supply of bamboo. I saw a program on Apple TV about those amazing bamboo structures they built, where, you know, you can literally be inside your house and you can look around you, and your walls, your roof, everything is made out of bamboo. And you can say that stuff didn't exist 5 years ago. The bamboo grows so fast that you can literally build a house with bamboo that's less than 4 years old. And I mean, yeah, that's a dream, but we need to deal with the reality where we are. So what we've been doing is we've been using a lot of old structures in the first place. And then secondly, my dad and now in more recent years, myself as well, you know, you keep your eye on auctions, you know, you find ways of finding secondhand materials, old steel, structural stuff, window frames, door frames. There's always something to be repurposed. Beautiful parquet flooring. I mean, some of the most popular up and coming areas, even classical areas like Parkhurst in Joburg, you know, there are a lot of old houses where people are repurposing parquet flooring. You know, houses with pressed ceilings are very popular. So it's not only fashionable, but it's also, it makes commercial sense to save money in that way. So if you look on social media at all our new projects, our little cabins, most of them we're using repurposed wood. I found a place in Rosslyn in Pretoria. It's an industrial area where this guy has the contract to strip factories that have, you know, double stories or extra storage space and old pallets and that kind of stuff. And I found the most amazing Northern Hemisphere type of pine and spruce and all kinds of different wood that he has in all kinds of thick beam sizes that we don't get in South Africa. In South Africa, we've got these conventional plank sizes. You don't often see a solid 20 by 20 centimeter square wooden beam. And we found this stuff with them. So this wood requires a bit more work because some of them have nails and screws and stuff in. But luckily, we've got guys on the farm that can help us prepare the wood. And yeah, you'll see a lot of the cladding, ceilings, floors, stairs. A lot of the stuff we've done on our most recent builds has been done with repurposed stuff. So yeah, that's very exciting for us. We love bartering. We love finding ways of working with people. We have some strategic partners who we do stuff with. So that's really exciting.
That is so true. That is 100% true. I like that you just mentioned that strategic partnerships and collaborating is important, because I was literally, a few minutes ago, I was reading a book about how relationships are resources and we should be moving with a long-term vision. So every network, every connection that you make, you must be working hard to maintain it firstly, and also learn something from every relationship. So it was like a very interesting book. I'll share the link in the description. But Thomas, I know that you previously worked as a business manager, so before Rosemary Hill, and I want to know more about which skills have you learned along the way that have proved to have been most helpful for you as a person who started a business?
Yeah, so I think one needs to start with something, firstly, that you're passionate about. I mean, obviously, there are people out there that are clever enough and have access to resources that, you know, even if they're not passionate, they can make it work. but for me, I think, from my past, I think the most important thing is people management. You need to know how to work with people and to kind of harness people's strengths and be, have the ability to work with their weaknesses or despite their weaknesses. Secondly, you need to be patient. You need to work so hard. I mean, we were very fortunate in the sense that we had access to facilities that were underutilized. But still, for the first, I think, 7 years, my wife and I put in 7 days a week. You know, we were doing 70 to 100 hours a week running the business. Neither of us had direct experience in running a hospitality type of organization. She had worked in the UK as a waiter for a little bit before getting a job there in an insurance company, and I had no hospitality experience at all, but I found myself in the kitchen. I was running the businesses on the farm Monday to Friday, and then on weekends I was in the kitchen from 6 in the morning until 10, 11, 12 at night. We were doing weddings, we were doing coffee shop. And only after about, I think, 4 years did we appoint our first chef. Up till then, it was me and other unskilled people in the kitchen just, you know, hustling, trying to make this business work. Every spare penny we get in, we'll buy more stuff, buy a coffee machine, buy, you know, a toaster, whatever you need. And Saturday nights after the wedding at 12 o'clock, we'd come home, we'd chuck the tablecloths in our little normal washing machine, set the timer for every half an hour to wake up, to take the the tablecloths out, hang them up, put the next one in. And then 6 o'clock Sunday morning, we're back at the restaurant with a clean tablecloth to have the next little function, you know. So one has to have perseverance, and you're not going to make money in the first year. You might not even make money in the second year. And many businesses only make money after 5 or 6 years. And that's really the reason why a lot of businesses in South Africa fail, is because people don't have the deep pockets to wait that long for, you know, for success. And I think for us, it took about 7 years for the business to really be established. And now it's 14 years later, and it's only since, as I said earlier, July last year, that we really are now word of mouth, top of mind for a lot of people all over Pretoria and Joburg because of the hype that was created by, you know, these travel influencers. I think before that, we were sort of top of mind for people in the wedding industry. Like any bride getting married would sort of know about us. But now, like, it's only now, after 14 years, that we can comfortably say, you know, we are pretty well known out there. And that's like blood, sweat and tears, nonstop, and cash flow stress. So yeah, to answer your question, sorry for the long ramble, but to answer your question, yeah, learning how to work with people, managing people, and then just hard graft and being patient. You know, if you're passionate, your business will eventually flourish. If you're super lucky, it might happen after a year, but yeah, for a lot of people, it takes quite a few years.
This has been such an insightful episode. I've personally learned a lot, especially about running and managing a farm stay business. Thomas, thank you again for taking the time to chat to us. And guys, if you want to learn more about Rosemary Hill, if you want to go visit, definitely visit their website, rosemaryhill.co.za. You can find all the information about what you can do on the farm, the different accommodation options that are available, and the pricing. So I will add the link in the description box. And I highly recommend visiting Rosemary Hill, even if it's just a day visit and you're not going to sleep. There's so much to do there. Personally, I love hiking, cycling, and even if you don't have your own bike, you can rent one on their website. So there's an option where you can actually rent a bike. And they have amazing food. I love the food there. So highly, highly recommend that you check it out. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do share with a friend and leave us a comment or a review. I highly appreciate those, and I read all of them. So thank you guys again. Till the next episode.